Hey listeners, Shrill Collective here. Just a heads up that The Rat King contains adult content, including descriptions and instances of stalking and violence. Listener discretion is advised. Resources for these issues can be found in the show notes and at the end of the episode. Please enjoy The Rat King. Welcome, everybody. This is The Rat King. Part 2. There's always a gap. Okay, so let's jump ahead to the summer of 2008. Daphne and Kay move back to New York City after a couple years in Los Angeles. They're thrilled to be back. And it's New York, so they both have restaurant and bartending jobs before they have a place to live, like within hours of arrival. They crash with a friend. On her days off, Daphne takes on the apartment hunting. Between the two of them, she has the appetite for it. Within a week, she answers a listing for a garden apartment on Adelphi Street.
So, the way to find the best apartment. When you filter results on whatever website, a lot of people check the box that asks for photos. Don't do that. Every great apartment I've ever found has been an understated listing. No photos, hardly any description.
And that's the case here?
Floor through, garden, fork green.
That is concise.
Yeah, people want descriptors and pictures to shortcut the process, but if you answer some of these more vague ones, you find the diamonds in the rough.
Daphne approaches the gate under the front stoop and presses the ringer. Nothing happens for a while, so she rings again. A few more seconds pass, and then
the interior door finally pops open, and a man poked his head out.
This is the departing tenant?
Gary, yes. The first thing I noticed was he wasn't wearing a shirt, but it didn't feel inappropriate. He was just one of those guys. Like, he had on cotton harem pants and some seed necklaces.
Got it. And so he says...
He goes, oh, are you the new renter?
But you're just there to view the place.
Right, and that's what I tell him. But then he gave me this funny look, like he was trying to make out if I was joking. And then he said... Well, Jade told me you're moving in at the end of the month.
And Jade is the landlady?
Right.
But you haven't agreed to this.
No, I hadn't even seen the place yet.
Okay, so what happens next?
Gary did a funny little acrobatic move. He sort of hooked his leg on the door jamb and swung his torso out to unlatch the gate. He didn't have shoes on, so maybe that's why.
So this is the opposite of no shirt, no shoes, no service.
Yeah, this is more like, come as you are.
As Daphne follows Gary inside, she notices, but doesn't linger on the fact, that the front paving slabs are dislodged. And she spies an ominous cavity beneath one of them. More on that later.
So you have the viewing?
Yes. And Gary was jumpy and a little impatient, probably because he was in the midst of packing and moving himself. But the vibe was a little, you know, off.
Off? How?
Okay, well, you know when you're trying to pass someone on the sidewalk, and you both step to the same side, and then you both step to the other side, et cetera, et cetera? It was like that. Like, that was our basic chemistry.
Got it. Like... out of sync and cordially in each other's way.
Precisely. And the space was a mess. Gary's stuff was everywhere. He obviously wasn't the most organized guy in the world. It seemed like he was some kind of visual artist because there was a lot of that kind of thing. Canvases, sketches, and he'd installed some pretty intense concrete sculptures around the place. Like big, protrusive pieces. I don't know. The whole situation was sort of awkward.
Why awkward?
Honestly, because his stuff was all over my house.
So you already knew?
Oh, yeah. It's like I always knew.
Gary's pointing things out to Daphne. Stove, closet, bathroom. But Daphne tells me she barely hears him. She says the moment she steps inside that apartment, she's completely under its spell. She isn't sure why, but as she tours the shrouded, cluttered room, which runs the depth of the brownstone from front windows to back windows, floor through garden, fork green. All the eccentricities and disrepair that would normally add up to a major deterrent instead beguile Daphne with nebulous possibility. Then Gary shows Daphne back to the garden.
At that point, any remaining composure I might have been clinging to just evaporated.
There's tender, precious green life everywhere, pressing between tree roots and cement slabs, demanding and demurring. Her eyes land on the canopy of the Japanese maple, and it whispers, "This is your home."
But there was something a little weird about Gary, something kind of harried about him. I couldn't put my finger on it, but the way he moved and jumped around, he seemed a little at risk. And he kept giving me totally unsolicited information.
The nervous overshare?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
What kinds of things?
Okay, well, he mentioned the landlady numerous times in the context of, like, they're such good friends. And his art, he talked about that a lot.
Oh, yeah, tell me more about the art.
Man, I don't know what to tell. It was mostly cement sculptures. There was a ceiling installation that looked crazy heavy with lots of, like, strands hanging down. I noticed the sculpture by the back door, kind of like an Easter Island-esque vibe, but obviously not that scale. Oh, and arrowheads. He told me he'd recently started trying to recreate primitive hunting tools, but he was very quick to add he would never kill an animal.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah. Oh, and he kept insisting he wouldn't be moving if it wasn't for some mysterious opportunity. And he'd been here 15 years. And
the Gary doth protest too much.
Yeah. I asked him if he shared the yard, and he said he had the only access. But there was this little wooden deck attached to the parlor floor window. He told me that belonged to the upstairs neighbors.
They had the parlor floor?
Yeah, and there was someone named Presley living on the third floor.
Presley?
Yeah, and another couple on the fourth floor.
As Gary gives the lay of the land, Daphne remembers looking up the side of the brownstone, following the currents of Boston ivy that branch apart like 1,000 extroverted tributaries, up, 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 all the way to the top, all encasing a tower of personalities she'll do very little to get to know in the coming months and years. And she won't have to, because the garden floor has its own sunken entrance, fortified by a creaky wrought iron gate, like a medieval prison.
I saw one other person. In the parlor floor window of the brownstone next door, a woman, kind of staring at us. I gave a little smile, a little wave. She did the weirdest thing. She shook her head at me.
This woman is called something with an E. Eloise, or maybe Esther. Daphne can never remember her name, though she generally has a very good memory. Creepily good. Eloise or Esther will be back later.
So then I heard this high, like, peal of laughter from inside, and I could make out Kay's voice. Gary kind of raised his eyebrows at me. I really want to say he was looking at me almost, like, sympathetically. And then he just scurried back inside.
And what was the laughter about?
So Jade, the landlady, and Kay had arrived at the exact same time, and they were greeting each other in this really demonstrative, over-the-top way. You know, as if bumping into one another at a scheduled appointment was some kind of unbelievable surprise. And this is not like Kay. They're cool as a cucumber normally.
Daphne describes Jade as round-faced, with long hair braided to her hips. She wears a loose summer sack dress and beaded sandals. As Daphne gets closer, she sees Jade has small, soft hands with tapered fingernails. Her toenails are painted gold.
Jade gave me a once-over and said, "Oh, you look just like you sound." There was definitely a twinge of disappointment in her voice. Then she said, "I was just saying I'll have Gary put the door back on the hinges before he moves out."
What door did she mean?
The actual apartment door. Yeah, I'd somehow neglected to notice that the apartment just sort of began without any formality. There was just this gaping threshold between the living room and the exterior hallway. So, I mean, obviously I asked why it was off.
And what was her response?
Instead of answering me, she turned to Kay and said, "Well, isn't she a little detective?"
Ew.
Yeah.
Daphne tells me that Jade then gives Kay this very specific smile, one they seem to effortlessly elicit from crazy older women of an exact generation. Daphne describes the smile as having an eerie, fabricated sunlight that makes Kay, the recipient, every bit as fishy as Jade, the benefactor. Jade touches their arm and says,
"You need to see the yard." And Kay said, "Can't wait!" I swear, they like rubbed their hands together. Like a cartoon when someone sees a big juicy turkey. I remember thinking to myself, have I ever seen them do this before?
So Kay goes out to the garden, presumably to eat the turkey. And this leaves Daphne and Jade alone. Except for Gary, who was last seen fussing around in the closet and might as well have disappeared into a gap in the molding.
So he's no help. I mean, I have to be honest that I'm not even totally sure what she and I talked about for the next few minutes. Everything sort of went hot and blurry. I know at some point the price came up.
Are you negotiating?
Well, going into it, Kay and I had discussed a line in the sand.
Which is?
We wanted to knock the monthly rent down by $100.
Do you?
No, not at all. The price stayed the same. But somewhere in the conversation, I ended up offering to do all the repainting ourselves. I have no idea why I did that.
Daphne remembers the next part with utter clarity. How Jade trains her copper-green eyes on her and smiles. Daphne says she still doesn't know if that smile was cunning or not, but she knows how she herself smiles in return. Nervously, from a weak seed.
And then I actually repeated it. "We don't mind repainting the walls. We always paint our own apartments." Which was untrue. And there was just this really long silence. I felt like a crumb. Like I was a little crumb being folded in a dinner napkin.
How does she respond?
She sort of evaluated me and then suddenly just clapped her hands together and said, "That's fabulous! I like people that do things themselves. Good things happen to people like that." I think she winked. It was fast. You know that scene from Rosemary's Baby when Guy sells his soul off camera?
The curling cloud of pipe smoke? Sure.
Right. This is what it was like to be inside the room with Guy and Roman making the deal. But what's weird is even though it was me cutting the deal, I'm totally still more Rosemary than Guy in this scenario, peering out from the kitchen, like sensing but not knowing.
Or maybe the opposite.
Maybe.
But it is still you that does the deed. You have agency.
Well, I guess I thought I was just agreeing to paint, not sell my soul.
Weren't you?
TBD on that one.
Kay comes back from the garden with a manic gleam in their eyes. And Daphne can see plainly that whatever in this place has grabbed hold on her got its hooks into Kay as well.
So it looks like Gary was right when he said you were the new tenant and you'd be moving in at the end of the month.
Yeah. I've definitely thought about that. Some things, it turns out, are preordained.
Before moving their things in, Daphne and Kay stand in their empty, new apartment with 3 gallons of white paint.
Every wall was a different color. Burnt orange, butter yellow, hunter green, and one, can I say shit brown? The closet nook was royal blue, but like a flat, lifeless blue, like a junkyard car. All of the above, totally and willfully ignored by me as I'd made that deeply unnecessary offer to do the painting.
I have to say, your color descriptors are very good.
Thank you.
It takes an entire day in multiple coats to cover the space. Daphne and Kay are not professional painters, despite her affinity for color. And they never finish it entirely to those standards. She says that for years after, they see little cloudy places in certain lights where another go-over was wanted. I have to say, as Daphne recounts the story of this apartment, you can see there were just so many things going on. So many eccentricities with the space. The funny, almost Dickensian cast of characters surrounding her. Daphne says after lunch, when they begin to paint the bathroom, they find one of Jade's sack dresses flung over the naked shower rack, still damp, like Jade had recently washed it there in the tub. It dripped and continued to drip, one per minute, for the rest of that day.
Jade's interesting.
Oh yeah, Jade is very interesting. We lived there, 5 years, and we never ever learned her last name. Or honestly, totally confirmed her first name.
What do you mean by that?
Well, she told us to call her Jade, which Gary had also said, but the couple on the parlor floor called her Jenny, and the third and fourth floor tenants called her Joy. We wrote our checks to Gazette and sent them to an address 2 miles east on Green.
That must have led to some confounding conversations with your neighbors.
It did, at first.
Oh, I meant to ask, what about the door?
They'd rehung it, like Jade said they would, but it didn't fit. I mean, it never lined up properly with the frame.
Did you fix it?
We tried. It was a big double door, like a really beautiful old detail. We secured one side to the ceiling and floor, so it wouldn't gape open, but there was only so much we could do.
So it stays like that?
Yeah, for the whole run. It wasn't terrible, but yeah, there was always a gap.
This seems to be a central theme of Daphne's life. There's always a gap. There's always an opening. And a door with a gap, a door that doesn't line up properly, as Daphne says, can offer very little protection against drafts or invaders of any kind.
Hey, baby. Happy sunrise. Man, it is early. Hey, hit me up, because I just want to finalize our plans. You know, my dude Adam, he just flew to Philly for some job, and he said he had the whole row to himself. So if you're worried, I can double mask it. Hit me back. Love you. Peace.
That's Phoebus. That's how he sounds in September 2020.
Hey, hold on. Okay, hey.
Is this still a good time?
Yeah, I was just putting on some water.
So, I have to say, it's weird hearing his voice. I mean, he sounds almost nice.
Interesting. It's usually guys that say that. They feel bad for him, like he just seems confused or misguided or whatever.
Other women don't ever say that.
Some have, for sure. I definitely notice a generational difference. Like, millennials are always immediately like, this is not okay, and what are you gonna do about it? Like an instant mobilization instinct. But women my mother's age tend to side more with him. Not side more. That's not what I mean. They make more allowances.
Does that bother you?
Yes. Yes, but I also think it makes perfect sense. Oppressors can't just oppress on their own. there are always supportive systems in place. In this case, a huge swath of the population that believes certain dynamics are just expected or normal.
Like the dynamics of stalking?
There's a pause here. Daphne has admitted to me before that the designation stalker is uncomfortable for her. There are many people in Daphne's life that have expressed sympathy for her situation. The situation of receiving texts, letters, and phone calls for over a decade, and having her family members' numbers and addresses discovered and used in this same way. People that have agreed the situation is terrible and frightening and unacceptable, that still wonder aloud to Daphne, is it really stalking if he isn't actually physically following you? I realize Daphne really doesn't use the term very often herself, unless I introduce it into the conversation. She's been gently nudged away from it over the years. By family, by friends, by law enforcement. She usually says she's being harassed by someone. It's easier, and everyone seems to agree at least this is true. Back to my question. Daphne's answer is...
yes, the dynamics of stalking are pretty baked into our culture. Think about romantic culture. A lot of celebrated forms of courtship involve surprising people at their homes or jobs, like sending them things they don't ask for, making grand declarations. But these are all trespasses if they're unwanted. And whether or not something is wanted can be a matter of perception, which is a pretty gray area.
Is that your...
yeah, hold on.
I have to admit, even as Daphne is saying this, I'm sort of frantically revisiting all my own relationships. What I thought was happening versus what was really happening. But I'm sure, or I think I'm sure, that I never crossed signals with someone to this degree.
Hello?
Yep.
Okay, where are we?
So, you're in the new apartment. It's painted. You've somehow dispensed of Jade's dress. And this is when you get your first infestation.
Yes, we got flies.
Fruit flies?
House flies. A massive wave of house flies. They laid eggs, they hatched, they were everywhere.
How many do you have?
Hundreds. We did all the normal stuff. Fly tape, spray. It was really gross. There were always a bunch of babies near the back door, so we finally realized they were hatching from Bijou's litter box.
I didn't know you have a cat.
She died last year, right before COVID, actually. We'd adopted her from the Humane Society almost immediately after moving into the Adelphi apartment. Her shelter name was Torty Spelling. Get it? Torty, tortoise. So, yeah, we changed it right away.
So was there larva in the litter?
Yes. I took it outside. We had a hose hookup in the back, and I washed it thoroughly. It was disgusting. While I was out there, the upstairs neighbor came out on his balcony. Vic.
Have you met before?
This was the first time. He just sort of stared at me. And then said... you know, we were supposed to take over that apartment.
That's the first thing he says?
Yeah. And then he said all the tenants were going to band together and make it a rec room.
How'd you respond?
I asked, then why didn't you? And he said Jade rented it to us without telling them.
That's awkward.
It was very awkward. There was definite animus in how he was looking at me. He said that he had a ping pong table in storage that he didn't know what to do with now. Then he pointed out this little pair of evergreen saplings by the fence and said, those are mine. And I think it's obvious I have a little stranger danger tick. So the way he was like flexing his proprietorship made me extremely uncomfortable. But then he said, and Gary let me plant those for my friends that died.
Oh, that's nice of Gary.
Yeah, I said that.
Daphne remembers they both just stand there for a minute, looking at the two little suffering evergreens, scrubby and strange foils to the lush surrounding ostrich ferns and the egg-white glazed leaves of the nearby saucer magnolia. The evergreens are not thriving. She says that's obvious. And it's especially sad when a dedication tree fails. It's happened to Daphne before. Thankfully, a gust of wind accommodates the next awkward pause. And then...
Then I just said I was sorry about his friends, and he said, if we get any flies up here, I'm going to ask you to pay for the exterminator.
Nice guy.
Strange guy. Anyway, before he went back inside, he dropped a little pack of mail down and said, this is yours. There was some random junk mail and a letter from Phoebus.
This is the first letter you ever received from him?
Correct.
And it's addressed to you at the Stew apartment?
No, weirdly, it was addressed to my best friend's parents in Baltimore, and they forwarded it to me.
Do you know why he would send it there?
I think because that's the only address he ever associated with me, like besides my parents, which would have been in the student directory. He'd spent Thanksgiving with his friend in Baltimore my freshman year. A lot of West Coast kids did that kind of thing for Thanksgiving. They'd stay on campus or go to a friend's house. My friend Ellie was from Baltimore too, and I stopped through there for a night, like on my way back up to school. Phoebus met up with us there, and we just kicked it on Ellie's porch for a couple of hours.
So one night, 20 years ago, and not even your direct relative, or relative at all, but he sends you mail there?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the letter?
I'll send you a screenshot.
Got it.
So you see how it's got all these little flowers drawn in the margins? He doodles a lot. That's one of his trademarks. And you can't tell this from the picture, but he always writes on this really flimsy three-hole punched paper, like lined paper. He always uses lined paper, like elementary school paper. It's written in blue ink. Okay. August 29th, 2008. Dear Daffodil, and that's spelled D-A-P-H-O-D-I-L.
Sorry, did he call you Daffodil?
No, never. Dear Daffodil, what's up? Long time no see. You've been hella on my mind of late. I wish we could go camping. You know what else? I've been with mad girls, and not a one of those hoes stack up to you. Just kidding. They're nice girls. How's your mom? Remember when you got in an argument with that dude Daniel, and he called you the B-word? I should have said something. Anyway, chillin' by the water right now. Probably gonna make my way east for some art fairs. Maybe I should be like Banksy and stay on the DL. You know Banksy? He's sick, but it's played. Anyway, I'm soaking up the rays. Late. And then he signs his real name.
Wow.
Yeah. So, obviously, yeah. But I guess it seemed pretty harmless.
That doesn't sound harmless to me.
Because you have the benefit of hindsight. I mean, I didn't like it. It felt a little creepy, but yeah. I guess I thought maybe he was in a program or something.
I wonder what Kay thinks when Daphne receives this letter.
Do you remember him from college?
No, not really. Dee described them to me, and I guess it kind of rings a bell. There were some skulky, landlocked types that were always at parties and stuff, but I can't really say he was on my radar.
Landlocked?
Oh, yeah. It's just kind of the vibe.
How does the letter make you feel?
Irritated. It was presumptuous. The girl says she doesn't want to date you. That should really be the end of it, then.
Daphne says it just kind of ended.
Okay, so it ended. The point is, they obviously were no longer dating and hadn't been for a decade.
But you weren't alarmed.
I was bothered, but not alarmed. Daphne had a similar reaction to it. It felt noteworthy, but we weren't totally sure why. I think we both let it blow over.
Back to Daphne.
But I did do something strange, which I realize I always do with his letters. I just sort of put it down and left it there. On the table. Where it got shoved around for a few days and picked up some coffee stains. And then it got moved to a shelf across the top of some books. It ended up on the floor for a while. I would just keep noticing it and thinking, I should put it away somewhere, but I don't know. I just didn't feel compelled to. It finally made it to a desk drawer, but yeah, it got seriously dragged in the meantime. I didn't feel like treating it with any respect.
So this is the beginning.
For me, yes. I guess we've established that the beginning for Phoebus had been going on for a pretty long time.
Daphne says not a week later, she wakes up in the morning to a scratching near her ear and finds a small gray mouse on her side table. It freezes in place when she sits up, but doesn't scramble. Apparently, its quick assessment of her turns up nothing threatening, and it begins moving about again, sniffing and rooting like a tiny barnyard pig. Daphne elbows Kay and whispers, "Mouse." Kay stealthily exits the bed and creeps into the kitchen area, while Daphne keeps watch over the mouse. Daphne recalls that they don't speak, but fall right into the routine they'd perfected during a Los Angeles white rat era. It goes like this. Kay returns with a colander tied to the end of an old hockey stick, about 2 feet of slack string between the two. They set a kitchen chair on the opposite side of the bed from the mouse and climb on top. And then, from a nearly 8-foot height advantage, Kay extends the hockey stick across the width of the bed, dangling the colander directly above where the mouse crouches, and slowly lowers it down.
They basically look like a human candle snuffer.
It's a very ornate method.
Yeah, well, you have to come from directly above. And it's better to have some horizontal distance, too. As soon as the colander was down, the mouse just started running around and around like crazy.
I thought it was gonna have a heart attack, but it was fine. We set it free at the park. Oh, and the best part. Bijou slept through this entire thing.
Does she ever come face to face with one?
The innocent and the beautiful have no enemy but time.
That's...
Yates. But yeah, there was another mouse a few months after that. Bijou killed it and left it as a present on the kitchen floor.
I meant to ask, whatever happens with the flies?
Oh, we killed them. Every single one. They tended to land on the ceiling. That's where I got most of them. They made up there, doubled up, and would stand on a stool or the trunk or the bed, whatever, and smack them.
Yeah, it was a measured, deliberate massacre. I think about that a lot. With these infestations, I'd never, ever done something like that before. Like stalking and hunting. Kay can tell you, I was bloodthirsty. I was obsessed. They're just flies, right? But the truth is, there are no lesser souls. Sometimes I wonder, where does that leave me? What will my karmic burden be?
The Rat King is a production of The Shrill Collective. It was written by L.R. Wilde, directed by Chelsea Feltman and Ash Croce. Audio engineering and sound design by Brando Kress. Production assistance by Christina Cole, Allison Wilkes Borland, and Linda DeFuria. Cover art by Samantha Farello. Featuring the voices of Stephanie Lavadera, Kelly Grego, Daniel Van Thomas, Fernando Vieira, Karen Levan, Richard Fisher, Dina Laura, Cherie Wishard, Al Pagano, and Rachel Feltman. The music was written, recorded, and arranged by Chelsea Feltman, Brando Kress, and Tim Leonard. Special thanks to Tim Leonard, Wes Borland, Max Zimbert, Monique Morgan, Laura Annister Walters, Maureen and Robert Croce, Rachel Feltman, Tessa Fay, and Tay Birch. If you or someone you know is being stalked, or is a survivor of domestic or sexual abuse, help is available. Go to stalkingawareness.com for victim resources and information. This and other information is linked in the show notes.